Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Wednesday, August 19th, 2020. I'm your reader, Paula Carrezzi. In today's weather, we'll have sunny skies in the Cedar Rapids area with a high of 81. Tonight, the skies will be clear with a low of 58. We'll enjoy 13 hours and 42 minutes of daylight today, with sunset tonight at 8:01 p.m. and sunrise tomorrow at 6:20 a.m. The big headline on today's front page of the Gazette, I lost everything. Cedar Rapids tenants scramble to find shelter. This is a story by Marissa Payne of the Gazette. Randy Pettit returned to his second-story Westdale Court apartment to see if there was anything left he could salvage. The Monday sun shined down on his last-ditch search effort, the sky now serving as the ceiling of his condemned building. Bits of insulation stuck to his cabinets, refrigerator, and floor. Pieces sprinkled the grass outside as if hurricane-force winds got into a pillow fight with the walls August 10th when a derecho whipped through Iowa. His TV, brown suede couch, most of his clothing, lost. Some Iowa Hawkeye cups, empty beer cans, and a Tostitos bag remained. Quote, "It's a total disaster," said Pettit, aged 52. "I lost everything," end quote. His unit is one of about 250 homes that Fire Chief Greg Smith said were destroyed in the storm. About another 700 sustained significant damage. Firefighters placarded buildings as they assessed storm damage, warning occupants that it's unsafe to enter. The devastating storm left some Cedar Rapids residents scrambling to find another place to live, forcing them to stay temporarily with friends and family, book a hotel room, set up tents outside their complexes, or seek shelter with the help of volunteer organizations. The storm hit apartment complexes especially hard on the city's southwest side. Pettit shuffled around from the Holiday Inn Express to the Microtel in Marion with his girlfriend, Krista Manos, before their landlord set them up in an unoccupied Westdale unit. Locking the door behind him as he left, he said there's nothing left to do but, quote, "pick up the pieces and move on," end quote. Off 16th Avenue Southwest, Alexius Minor Hughes, age 24, is strapped for cash. The Sinclair gas station where she works as a manager burned as the derecho tore through and she said she hasn't been paid since the storm. Her green Ford Explorer slouched to the right with a flat rear tire in the Shamrock Apartments parking lot, damaged in the destructive winds. A moldy odor permeates her apartment now, 8 days after the storm, but at least the power came back on. And she said just when things began to look up, the apartment manager delivered a blow. Minor Hughes and about half of the other residents have until Thursday morning to leave their homes. Quote, "I'm scared. I don't want to go to a shelter," she said. "I have to come out of my comfort, my home, to go." Her voice wavered as she paused to wipe tears from her eyes. "I worked so hard, you know, to get just where I am," end quote. Lisa Gavin, the managing attorney with Iowa Legal Aid, which provides free legal services to low-income people, said the most common issue her organization has seen after the storm is landlord-tenant disputes, mostly with people whose rentals have been deemed uninhabitable. Residents with renter's insurance typically have policies that cover the cash value of damaged personal items. Some policies also cover the cost of temporary housing, but those without renter's insurance are, quote, kind of on their own, Gavin said. Quote, "This isn't the landlord's fault, and the landlord's insurance won't cover people," she said, "but residents can still turn to the Iowa Department of Human Services for food replacement and apply for an Individual Assistance Program grant." Minor Hughes said some members of her family know of the devastation in Cedar Rapids, but there's no one extending a helping hand. She's tried without success to reach Red Cross, and as the clock ticks toward Thursday, she doesn't know where to go next. Quote, "I'm stuck," she said, looking at the three children playing in the grass outside her complex. "I'm lost for words," end quote. The Arrow Ridge and Shamrock Apartments residents are banding together to check in on their neighbors, organizing donations of food, diapers, and other supplies in the complex's laundry room. They've grilled food to serve tacos, spiral ham, and grilled cheese to keep everybody fed. John Thompson, the manager there, has the unlucky task of informing people that they need to leave. He said he estimates residents in about half the complex's 488 units will have to relocate, at least temporarily, and he's been working with volunteer organizations to help coordinate places for people to potentially stay. Stepping outside of his office to walk toward Johnson Avenue Southwest, he quipped, quote, "I promise if they start throwing stuff, I will do everything in my power to make sure you don't get hit," end quote. Residents had yelled at him dozens of times already Tuesday, he said. blue tarps rested on several of the units of what he now calls Ground Zero. In the immediate aftermath, he said, everyone came together to knock on doors and make sure no one was hurt. And since then, donations and volunteers have poured in. Staff from ServPro, the fire and water restoration company working on the Arrow Ridge and Shamrock apartments, peppered him with questions. Residents stopped him to ask about what to do about their storm-damaged apartment. Volunteers balanced communicating with residents and updating him on their efforts to secure resources for them. He's able to keep up with it all because he knows his community and they know him. Quote, they know I'm not going to put frosting on it and make it a cupcake, he said of his brash, upfront management style. On the walk back to his office, Thompson passed a resident sitting on a staircase who thanked him for his help. Quote, it'll all be good, Thompson hollered back. Someday, not Sunday either. End quote. In other front page news, James Q. Lynch of the Gazette reports, mayors press Trump to act on aid for homeowners. More than once, President Donald Trump told Iowa federal, state, and local elected officials Tuesday that more help will be coming for individuals and households hurt by hurricane-force winds that ripped across Iowa over a week ago, carving a $4 billion and counting path of damage. Quote, we'll take care of it, the president said multiple times during the half-hour discussion in response to pleas from the mayors of Cedar Rapids and Marion, communities at the epicenter of the damage. Quote, we're getting it taken care of and done very quickly, said Trump, who Monday signed Governor Kim Reynolds' request for a major disaster declaration. The declaration makes funding available to state and local governments as well as certain nonprofits on a cost-sharing basis for emergency work and the repair or replacement of facilities damaged in 16 counties, including Lynn and Johnson. However, according to the Federal Emergency Management Agency, Trump's declaration covered only the public assistance portion of Reynolds' request, about $45 million for debris removal and repair to government buildings and utilities. Her request for about $82.7 million to help those whose homes were destroyed or badly damaged was not included. FEMA says that still is under review. Also not approved yet is the $3.77 billion for estimated agricultural damage to farmland, grain bins, and buildings, around $100 million for private utilities repair. According to Iowa Homeland Security, the agriculture and private utility funding wouldn't come under the auspices of FEMA. Iowans need the individual assistance from FEMA, Cedar Rapids Mayor Brad Hart told Trump during the president's brief event at the Eastern Iowa Airport. The individual assistance is, quote, really important, end quote, because almost every one of the community's 60,000 homes and businesses was damaged. Homeowners insurance, for those who have it, won't cover many of the expenses, including tree removal they face, Hart said. Quote, that could be tens of thousands of dollars, he said. Quote, so adding the individual assistance component to the disaster declaration would really help so many people get those trees out of their yard and not have such a financial burden, end quote. Quote, we'll take care of that, Trump said, and Reynolds assured the mayor the state is gathering the numbers needed to expand the declaration. Quote, we'll be able to add that on, and we should be able to do that in a short amount of time, she said. Marion Mayor Nicholas Abu Asali estimates that 90 to 95% of all homes and businesses in his city have some damage. Many businesses that had to shut down to slow the spread of COVID-19 had started to reopen. So, quote, the scale of this disaster will be devastating, Abu Asali warned. Quote, okay, we're working on it, Trump said. It's a double whammy, end quote. The devastation of the derecho is taking a human toll, added Kim Ream, executive director of Mission of Hope in Cedar Rapids. The faith-based organization works with people in need, including those who are homeless. Quote, and this week I became one of them, she said. Although confident her family will recover, Ream said others are not as fortunate and they need the federal individual assistance. Quote, their physical needs are not being met, Ream said about the people Mission of Hope is feeding. Quote, many of them have lost their shelter. They don't know where their clothes are. Quote, we're strong, Ream said, echoing other speakers. We're strong and we're resilient, Mr. President, but we are tired and we need your help, end quote. Trump also heard from U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley, who the president described as, quote, an incredible man, end quote, and Iowa Agriculture Secretary Mike Naig about the impact on farms. About 113 million acres of crops have been damaged or destroyed, Grassley said. Naig told Trump Central and East Central Iowa cooperatives are reporting early estimates of more than 57 million bushels of licensed grain storage seriously damaged or destroyed. The co-ops estimate it will cost more than $300 million to remove, replace, or repair the damaged grain storage bins. In light of the damage done to the ethanol industry, first as COVID-19 reduced Americans' travel, and now by the wind damage to cornfields, U.S. Senator Joni Ernst told Trump he should not allow any waivers from the renewable fuel standard. Quote, just dispense of those, she said. We just need help from the EPA to follow the intent of the law, end quote. Quote, we'll speak to them, Trump said. We'll speak to them, end quote. State Representative Ashley Hinson, a Republican from Marion, stressed the importance of repairing schools that, quote, suffered damage, catastrophic damage, in many cases similar to a hurricane, end quote. Quote, well, we'll take care of it and you will make a fast recovery, Trump said. Hinson is challenging Democratic First District Representative Abby Finkenauer, who was not invited to the event. Finkenauer, who has been critical of Reynolds' efforts, spoke Monday to presumptive Democratic presidential nominee, former Vice President Joe Biden. Biden and Finkenauer had a brief conversation during which she asked him, quote, to use his national platform to draw attention to the crisis in Iowa, her campaign said in a statement. Quote, she looks forward to engaging with anyone and everyone to bring much-needed resources to our state, end quote. Biden, Iowa campaign director Lauren Dillon called Trump's stop a, quote, transparent attempt to save face, end quote, in the state. Quote, one photo op in Iowa does not make up for 4 years of failed leadership, she said. Trump noted he is familiar with many of the counties devastated by the derecho from campaigning here in 2016. Quote, this has been a very loving area, he said about Iowa. Also on today's front page is a story written by Mike Kloss titled Ellis Revisited, 12 Years After Flood, a Derecho. 12 years ago, I wrote a story for this newspaper about the effects of that year's historic flood on residents of Ellis Boulevard Northwest. Tuesday, I was back. It was 8 days after the city was struck by another epic natural disaster, the August 10th hurricane-force derecho, rather than the Cedar River that runs nearby. Most, but not all, along Ellis had their power back. Here are some sights and sounds from along Ellis, including stories of three residents of that street's 900 block. Quote, it's just devastating, said Dan Whitford, speaking for an entire city. Quote, I had a tree trunk fall on my car and a tree fell on my truck. We had to take a jack, not to the car itself, but to the tree that was on it. My wife was in the driver's seat. When we got the tree jacked up, and I said go, and she got out. Quote, the property insurance and car insurance won't cover the damage to our vehicles, but those who have comprehensive auto insurance policies may have coverage. Because it's an act of God or something, the insurance says if a tree falls on your car, it's an act of God. I'm on work comp. I've been hurt for 10 months now. This makes it that much harder for us because I can't work, and my wife drove for Uber, and now our car can't even. We can't even work. Quote, my wife has asthma, and she needs to use breathing equipment. We have no electricity. We have no generator. We're in survival mode at this point. I lived at my dad's on 11th Street Northwest during the flood. I lost all my childhood, everything you want to save. The flood actually came up to his house and stopped because it's at the start of a hill, but it flooded the basement and first floor. My room happened to be in the basement, so it got demolished. All those girlfriend letters, all that sentimental stuff was all gone. End quote. Jessica Gimsey was across the street from her home on Ellis helping the Whitfords. Quote, it's been a huge community effort, she said. Quote, at a gas station, this lady handed us water, chips, and a sandwich. These other people handed us water, chips, and a bag lunch. Then these other people came by, three cars long, knocking on people's doors. They gave out applesauce, a sandwich, a cookie, and a drink. It's just been the kindest thing I've seen coming out of people. It's heartwarming. I haven't had any data or cell service for over a week. There's a trampoline in my backyard that I'm slowly but surely taking apart. It's from at least four houses down. It took out my gutter and one of my windows. End quote. When I told Gimsey I normally write about sports for the Gazette, she said, quote, this is a sport. There's lifting, end quote. In 2008, a washer and dryer were set out on an Ellis curb ruined by the flood. Tuesday, just a short distance from that spot, a refrigerator was on a curb, wrecked by the derecho. Juma Nakashenyi's family of seven is sweating it out at their home on Ellis. No electricity in Iowa in August makes for a warm house. Quote, to cook is hard, he said. Everything is hard at this time. We're using candles, but it's not enough. It's so dark inside. We go to bed late. We stay outside maybe until midnight because it's not as warm outside. I'm charging my phone in the car, end quote. But his eldest child, 18-year-old son Ali, no longer has a car. A fallen tree destroyed it. Quote, "We have roof damage, but the house is okay," Nakashenyi said. "The water's good," end quote. He and his wife fled the Democratic Republic of Congo for a refugee camp in Zambia, then moved to Durham, North Carolina, then to Cedar Rapids. Quote, "It's a good place to live, a quiet place," Nakashenyi said. "Not many problems. Life is better," end quote. But he wasn't whistling happy tunes Tuesday. Quote, "It's hot inside," he said. Turning the page to Iowa Today, Gage Miskimen of the Gazette reports, over 90% of Marion homes and buildings were damaged in derecho. Over 90% of Marion homes and buildings have at least some damage, according to city officials. City manager Lon Pluckhahn said the city has finished about 85% of initial inspections as of Tuesday to, quote, "at least get an inventory of the properties with identifiable damage," end quote. Quote, 90 to 95% of all properties in the city sustained some degree of damage, Pluckhahn told the Gazette. Quote, "In the next few days, we will have a statistical breakdown of the impacted properties," end quote. Mayor Nick Abu Asali said that as city estimates, the cleanup will cost the city around $3 million. That expense doesn't include the cost that individual property owners will have, he said. The damage just to city facilities is likely to be $2 million or more, Pluckhahn added. Quote, "When I see the damage to our town, I'm completely heartbroken," Abu Asali said. "The loss of trees will change our tree canopy for decades," end quote. Pluckhahn said the city is starting to transition from disaster response to recovery activities. The city has brought in Southern Disaster Company from South Carolina to provide additional equipment and to help with debris removal, Pluckhahn said. The city also has additional personnel assigned to it from the state through Linn County Emergency Management to help with the command center, which is in City Hall. Quote, "Of course, the Guard is active in the community, supporting debris removal through Alliant, and the DOT has assigned several crews to help support us," Pluckhahn said. He said the city will add resources to the building division to help process permits and has reactivated the online permit tool as well. Abu Asali said a supply distribution center has been set up in town since Friday, staffed with volunteers. The center is at Marion Square Mall on 7th Avenue. According to the Tuesday City Update on its website, needs include bread, peanut butter, jelly, boxed cereal, feminine products, diapers, pull-ups, mac and cheese, canned vegetables, and fruit with pull tops, small bags of pet food, fresh fruit, spaghetti sauce, and instant potatoes. Food box distributions at the same location take place from 1 to 3 p.m. through the week, the news release said. Quote, "I'm energized with the outpouring of support and volunteer response," Abu Asali said. The mayor said he also has been trying to respond to communications from Marion residents and make sure their needs are met as fast as possible. Quote, "Yesterday, a woman called me in tears because her neighbor had no insulin," he said, saying he made sure the individual got the help they needed. Quote, "This disaster made things worse, and I can see the impact. It breaks my heart," end quote. Additionally, the city has established so-called technology stations at Thomas Park. 30-minute sessions are available on city-owned equipment, but residents are free to bring their own devices and connect to the city guest Wi-Fi. The stations are open 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Friday, and 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday and Sunday. Power strips are also available outside the Thomas Park shelter room for charging needs. The Gazette continues to report on where people who've been impacted by the derecho can find food, water, free meal distribution, shelter, and charging stations in the Cedar Rapids area. Food pantry locations in the Cedar Rapids area include the Hiawatha Community Center, which is available from 7:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. weekdays, the Southeast Linn Community Center in Lisbon, available from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday to Friday. This is for Lisbon and Mount Vernon residents, and in Marion at Marion Square, where those who have items to donate can drop those off between 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. daily. The Marion Chamber of Commerce and Churches of Marion Food Pantry have set up aid and donation stations at Marion Square, 1107 7th Avenue, all week with many supplies for storm victims, including food, meals, water, diapers, and other baby needs, and much more. The pantry is open 1 to 3 p.m. daily. There are also community members available to help with advice about storm recovery. Donations can be dropped off from 9 to 4, and volunteers are needed to help distribute supplies. Hy-Vee is distributing food at neighborhood resource centers, including Ladd Library on Williams Boulevard Southwest, Northwest Recreation Center parking lot on 11th Street Northwest, St. Paul's Methodist Church on 3rd Avenue Southeast, the ROC Center on 10th Street Southeast, and Taylor Elementary School on 7th Avenue Southwest. Hot meals will be served daily in many locations thanks to the generosity of the Zach Johnson Foundation and Operation Barbecue Relief with the support of several corridor area restaurants and organizations. Operation Barbecue Relief will be serving meals, 500 meals at the following sites every day for the next week from noon to 2 and from 5 to 7. The Downtown Public Library on 5th Avenue, Ladd Library on Williams Boulevard, Northwest Recreation Center on 11th Street, Jane Boyd Community House on 14th Avenue Southeast, Taylor Elementary School on 7th Avenue Southwest, Roosevelt Middle School on 13th Street Northwest, Grant Elementary School on Outlook Drive Southwest, the Johnson Steam Academy on 18th Street Southeast, Nixon Elementary School on Nixon Drive in Hiawatha, Jefferson School on 20th Street Southwest, and the Polk Alternative Education Center on B Avenue Northeast. The Salvation Army in Cedar Rapids is serving hot lunch daily from noon to 1:30 in the parking lot at 1000 C Avenue Northwest. Mobile disaster teams are also going out daily to some of the hardest-hit areas, providing food, water, and comfort, said Shala Ashworth, a spokeswoman for the Salvation Army. For assistance, call 319-364-9131. There are also overnight shelters being operated by the American Red Cross at Veterans Memorial Coliseum and Palo Community Center. Anyone in need of assistance can call 1-800-RED-CROSS. Select option 4, then option 2, then option 2 again. Let's turn now to the Insight page of today's Gazette. Liz Lentz's column is titled, "The Invisible Disaster from the Storm." Quote, "Where the expletive is everyone?" yelled Calvin Ross, aged 42, a construction worker who lives in Westdale Court Apartments. Quote, "Where is the help?" end quote. It was Sunday, 6 full days since a derecho with wind speeds of more than 120 miles per hour blew through Cedar Rapids. Ross and his partner Nicole Sieber consider themselves lucky compared to their neighbors. After all, they still have a roof, they still have walls, but they've been living for days in a one-room apartment with no power in the heat of August with nowhere else to go. In front of their apartment is a tree ripped to shreds from the storm. Thick, heavy branches dangle precariously. As we talk, Sieber tells the kids not to go near the tree. The storm is over, but the disaster is only getting worse. When the windstorm hit Iowa August 10th, initial news stories reported on the widespread crop damage and images of flattened cornfields and grain bins crumpled like discarded beer cans dominated the news. When Vice President Mike Pence visited the state Thursday, he looked only at pictures of crop damage before flying out of the state. But the tragedy of the disaster wasn't the corn, nor was it the loss of trees. The tragedy was the voices of the unheard, the people who went for days without help. On Friday, 5 days after the storm, I got a call on my cell phone. I had put the number on a story I wrote about ways people could donate to help Iowans in need. I used that number because with internet down, I knew my office phone wouldn't work. It was a woman. She has diabetes and hadn't had a meal in days. She couldn't leave her home. She wanted to know how she could get a hot meal. She wasn't the only one. Three other people called my cell phone that day. All of them were elderly. They were stuck at home. No internet, no cell phones. Their suffering is invisible to their city. It took reporting by the Iowa Public Radio to bring attention and resources to the people in Terrace Court Apartments, many of whom don't speak English as their first language. Quote, "Disaster response needs to be focused and coordinated," said Kristen Manges, Ph.D., RN, and National Clinician Scholar at the University of Pennsylvania. Manges recently moved to Philadelphia from Iowa and, when the disaster hit, she spent time following up with patients in the disaster area. Quote, "There is still no central place for people to get information," she said. "The community is relying largely on crowdsourcing by the general public through social media to do the legwork of coordinating the disaster response," end quote. And while, as Manges points out, it's great to see neighbors helping neighbors, this is how misinformation is spread. Rumors about robberies and racist stories about resource hoarding are rampant, and the people being missed are the ones without a voice. Quote, "Crops, you can see," Manges pointed out. "Trees, you can see, but those without a voice, those are the ones who are being failed," end quote. In a phone call with me, City Council Member Dale Todd sounded tired when he said, quote, "It's clear the safety net we thought we had is not good enough. We have failed the immigrants, the invalids, and the old, and we did not respond as quickly and efficiently as possible. We need to do better for our city." This is Liz Lentz's column, and she concludes it with her phone number, 319-651-8148. Today's letter to the editor in the Gazette is written by Roger Johansson of Lisbon, entitled, "Trump Attempts to Commit Voter Fraud." Like much of public life during the pandemic, the U.S. Postal Service is under great stress. How did President Donald Trump respond? He appointed Louis DeJoy as Postmaster General. DeJoy's only qualification for the job is having made huge contributions to Trump. DeJoy started with efforts to make voting by mail more difficult. He issued a mandate that no postal employees may work overtime. Mail will be late. In addition, he had many street-side mailboxes removed across the nation. Voters will be confused or deterred from mailing their ballots. Trump largely admitted that his goal was to make it hard for citizens to vote by mail. There is widespread understanding that ballots may take more than a week from where they are mailed until the Postal Service delivers them. This is fraud. The U.S. Constitution mandates that there be a Postal Service. Trump and Republicans claim to hold the Constitution as their political guide. In contrast, Trump and DeJoy are trying to limit the number of vote-by-mail ballots received by polling stations or county auditors' offices. In alarmist terms, Trump predicted there will be rampant voting fraud. Fulfilling that prediction, Trump commits fraud by radically hindering the Postal Service in its effort to facilitate voting. We are doomed if we re-elect this president. We can trust Biden-Harris to be honest in governing. We cannot trust Trump-Pence to do the same. Signed, Roger Johansson of Lisbon. Todd Dorman has written a column titled, "The Donald and the Derecho, a Whirlwind Briefing." So President Donald Trump came to Cedar Rapids Tuesday to be briefed on efforts to recover from last week's destructive derecho. Fittingly, it was a whirlwind visit. Trump's airport briefing with federal, state, and local leaders lasted just roughly 30 minutes. He sat at the head of a U-shaped table with officials on either side. Behind Trump were large pictures of damage, all from rural areas. Acting Homeland Security Secretary Chad Wolf effusively praised Trump for coming to Cedar Rapids, even though the president skipped surveying actual damage. He follows Vice President Mike Pence, who last week also failed to visit the actual disaster areas. Quote, "Don't forget this has been a loving area for me. Cedar Rapids has been fantastic," Trump said. A fair amount of time was taken up by panelists lavishing love on the president for swiftly approving Iowa's request for a major disaster declaration. Trump indeed act fast once he had the request, but it took Republican Governor Kim Reynolds several critical days to get the application in order. So the declaration was approved 6 days after the storm, while residents sat in the dark. And its approval turned out to be only partial, with $82 million in aid for individuals struggling to clean up and recover still in limbo. Cedar Rapids Mayor Brad Hart urged Trump to provide individual help for Iowans facing expensive tree removal and other storm costs not covered by insurance. Quote, "That would be a big help for us," Hart said. Quote, "It's big. We'll take care of it, Mayor," Trump promised. And the president had plenty of questions. Many were about corn. Quote, "This took a big chunk out of your entire state, Chuck," Trump said, turning to U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley. Quote, "About 13 million of acres of crops," Grassley said. Quote, "Amazing," Trump said. Trump was concerned about pending corn orders from China, the, quote, "largest in history," end quote. "Will they be able to fill an order like that?" End quote. Quote, "If that's your question, then the answer is yes, because we have so much carryover from the year before," Grassley said. Quote, "Oh, that's very good," Trump said. Some questions were about the storm. Quote, "So this was, in a way, less dangerous than a tornado, but much wider, right? But the point of a tornado is truly brutal," Trump asked Marion farmer Wayne Blackford. Quote, "It felt like a tornado. I've never seen stuff go by the window so fast," Blackford said. Kim Ream, executive director of Mission of Hope, spoke last and best. Quote, "They're hungry today," Ream said of her mission's clients. "It's day 9 without power in that neighborhood. They're not just hungry for food, they're hungry for compassion from our leaders, just to know that our leaders care and are working on their behalf." Quote, "We're strong and resilient, Mr. President, but we are tired and we need your help," Ream said. Quote, "Thank you very much," was all Trump said. Maybe she should have asked him for the greatest, biggest, record-breaking help in history. Again, that was Todd Dorman's column. You are listening to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Wednesday, August 19th, 2020, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Disabled. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Cedar Rapids, Lee J. Dart, aged 71, died Saturday, August 15th. Arrangements by Papich Kuba Funeral Service in Cedar Rapids. Also Cedar Rapids, Irvin Lee McConnell, aged 85, died Monday, August 17th. Arrangements by Murdoch Linwood Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Cedar Rapids. Tama, Jeff Marvin Abersole, aged 45, died Sunday, August 16th. Arrangements by Cruz Phillips Funeral Home in Tama, Toledo. Toledo, Lester Edward Gebhardt, aged 73, died Monday, August 10th. Arrangements by Cruz Phillips Funeral Home in Tama, Toledo. Waukon, Walter N. Johnson, aged 82, died Monday, August 17th. Arrangements by Martin Grau Funeral Home in Waukon. John Albert Walton, aged 79, of Anamosa, passed away August 12th. John was born in Monticello. The family moved to Anamosa, where they owned and operated the Hillcrest Motel. John graduated from Anamosa High School and went to work at Energy Manufacturing in Monticello. John's family is planning a private service in Montana at his request. John will be missed by his family and friends. Patrick R. Cannon of Nampa, Idaho, went home to be with his Lord Jesus on July 28. There will be a special flag ceremony at the Gardena, California Fire Department at a later date. Pat was 75 years old. He was born November 25, 1944, in Iowa City, to Jim and Dorothy Cannon. He graduated from Regina High School in 1963 and went on to attend the University of Iowa. Pat was an Army reservist during the Vietnam War and a fireman paramedic in L.A. County, California, for 30 years, where he was honored as Fireman of the Year in 1988. Carlene M. Grandin of Cedar Rapids left this earth, as she did most occasions, with grace and an indelible impression on the many who knew her and met her. She passed away quietly on August 17th in her Methwick community at age 87. She remains in our memories as a grand person, a woman of substance who will be dearly missed. Carlene began her life in the small town of Joyce, Iowa, followed by college and love in Iowa City, and ending in the city she loved, Cedar Rapids. To all who knew her, Carlene is remembered as a philanthropist and patron. She put desire into action through the Carlene and Eugene Grandin Charitable Foundation and support for the Cedar Rapids Opera and Theater Cedar Rapids. She was a longtime member of the Cedar Rapids Country Club and former board member of the Hall Foundation. A private service will be held at Christ Episcopal Church Columbarium. Online condolences may be directed to the family at www.cedarmemorial.com. Doreen Jane McNeil, aged 70, passed away at the Dennis and Donna Oldhorf Hospice House on Saturday. After a long battle with cancer, she is finally at peace. Born in Waterloo on June 28, 1950, to Dwayne and Betty Pochaski McNeil, Doreen graduated from North Tama High School in 1968 and continued her education at the University of Iowa, from which she graduated in 1972. Doreen spent many years as a dental hygienist with the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics and the College of Dentistry. Following Doreen's wishes, no public services will be held. A private family celebration will be held this fall. Brass Chapel and the Avicenture in Cedar Rapids is in charge of arrangements. In lieu of flowers, please send any donations to Hospice of Mercy. Harold Sylvester Marling of Olin passed away Sunday, August 16th, at his home, surrounded by family. Born April 27th, 1924, in a farmhouse 2 miles north of Quasqueton, he graduated from Independence High School. He married LaVon Grimm on June 30th, 1943. Drafted into the Army, he served overseas during World War II in France, Belgium, and Germany. A private family burial will be held at Mount Hope in Independence. A celebration of life service will be held at a later date. Dawson Funeral Home in Olin is assisting the family at this time. Earl W. Takes, aged 84, of Cedar Rapids, passed away Monday, August 17th, at home. A visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday, August 20th, at Cedar Memorial Park Funeral Home. Private funeral services for family only will be held on Friday. Earl was born April 19, 1936. He was a lifelong builder and remodeler. Earl began his career with Iowa Manufacturing as a draftsman. Online condolences may be directed to the family at www.cedarmemorial.com. Todd Rollinger of Central City, aged 52, passed away Saturday, August 15th. Visitation is from 2 to 6 p.m. Sunday, August 23rd, at Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Marion. A private family funeral mass will be held at St. Stephen Catholic Church in Central City, with Father Nick Marsh officiating. Todd was born November 10, 1967, in Monticello, the son of Robert and Lynn Recker Rollinger. He was united in marriage to Jennifer Larimer on October 14, 1995. At All Saints Catholic Church in Cedar Rapids. Todd was a driver for UPS in the Marion, Cedar Rapids, Monticello, Anamosa, and Delhi areas for more than 25 years. He was a member of St. Stephen Catholic Church in Central City. Todd enjoyed hunting, fishing, and tinkering around in his shed. Most of all, he loved spending time with his friends and family. Sadly, Todd's father, Bob, passed away peacefully in his sleep Tuesday, August 18th. Patricia Joan Day Happel of Winston-Salem, North Carolina, passed from this life on August 17th. The daughter of the late Kenneth and Esther Hayes Day, she was born August 18th, 1931, in Hedrick, Iowa. Joan, by no surprise, was one of the smallest members of the 1950 graduating class of Ollie High School, where their class motto was, quote, "We finish to begin." A fitting motto to describe her journey here on Earth. Services will be held in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Blake Allen Corporon of Cedar Rapids went home to be with his Lord on July 27. He was born April 18, 2000, to Max Corporon and Sherry Gilliland of Cedar Rapids. He was a 2018 graduate of Linmar High School, who enjoyed nature, animals, boating, driving, and traveling, especially his trips to Colorado and California. A service will be held at 2 p.m. Friday, August 21st at Gospel Light Baptist Church on 2nd Avenue in Marion. A celebration of life will also be held from 4 to 9 p.m. on Saturday, August 22nd at Valley High Rec Center. Larry Dean Perkins of Yuma, Arizona, aged 81, formerly of Cedar Rapids, died at his home on Tuesday, March 24th, after living courageously with cancer. Graveside services will be held at 11 a.m. Friday, August 21st, at Luana Cemetery in Luana, Iowa. Mary Margaret Keating, known as Maggie, of Iowa City, died peacefully on Sunday, August 16th, after a short illness. She was surrounded by her family, music, and prayers. She was under the loving care of the UI Palliative Care Team in Iowa City Hospice. The choirs of angels have a new soprano. Maggie was guided to heaven by the light of her life, Bob, her granddaughter, Sarah Keating, her parents, Bob's parents and siblings, and Maggie's two sisters and three brothers. A public visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, August 19th, at Gay and Chia Funeral and Cremation Service. All are welcome. Private family services will be held Thursday at St. Patrick Catholic Church. To share a thought, memory, or condolence, please visit the funeral home website at www.gayandchia.com. Mary Ellen Loren, aged 76, of Iowa City, died suddenly Sunday, August 16th, at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics of an aortic aneurysm. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Saturday, August 22nd, at Gay and Chia Funeral Home and Cremation Services. There will be a prayer service following the visitation. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations can be made to Team Breast Friends or Mercy Hospital Foundation. To share a thought, memory, or condolence with Mary's family, please visit the funeral home website at www.gayandchia.com. Mary Ellen Steppens was born September 22, 1943, in Lamar's, the daughter of Lyle and Marie Borchers Stevens. She grew up on the family farm. She attended schools in Lamar's, graduating from Lamar's High School with the class of 1961. Mary then went on to earn her degree in elementary education from Iowa State University, graduating in 3 years in 1964. She began teaching in Cedar Rapids and later in Iowa City. Stephen Albert, known as Steve, age 62, of Urbana, Iowa, passed away on Saturday, August 15th, at his home following a brief illness with cancer. The family will greet friends from 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday, August 20th, at Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Center Point, with a prayer service at 6:30 p.m. A private funeral mass will be held at St. Mary's Catholic Church in Urbana, officiated by Father Jim Brokman. Burial will take place at Urbana Memorial Cemetery. Steve was born July 1, 1958, the son of Clarence and Darlene Fish Albert. On October 1, 1994, he was united in marriage to Joyce M. Spursflog. Following his dream, Steve first opened the first Albert Auto in 1999. He later opened three additional shops. Steve was happiest when driving his Corvette and camping on the weekends. Patricia Ann Barta Waskow of Marion, aged 87, died Sunday, August 16th, due to complications from hip surgery after a fall during the derecho power outage. There will be no services, visitation, or burial per Pat's wishes. Pat was born in Cedar Rapids on December 5, 1932. She was joined in marriage to Dwayne Waskow on January 31, 1953, at Camp Stewart, Georgia, where Dwayne was stationed during the Korean War. Opting not to immediately pursue college or a career, she instead stayed home to raise her two children. Pat later achieved her degree in history at Coe College, for which she was quite proud. Memorials may be made to Iowa Public Radio or the Marion Public Library. Robert V. Rollinger of Sand Springs, aged 81, died Tuesday, August 18th, at the Monticello Nursing and Rehab Center. A visitation will be held from 2 to 7 p.m. Thursday, August 20th, at Kramer Funeral Home in Monticello, where a parish vigil service will be held at 2 p.m. Visitation will continue from 9 to 10 a.m. Friday, August 21st, at the funeral home, before Mass. A Mass of Christian burial will be held at 10:30 a.m. Friday, August 21st, at Sacred Heart Catholic Church in Monticello. Father Paul Baldwin will officiate. Burial will be in Calvary Cemetery in Cascade. Bob was born September 4, 1938, in Bernard, Iowa, the son of Victor and Laura Mormon Rollinger. He married Lynn Recker on April 23, 1960, in Sand Springs. His most recent employment was serving as a guard at Oakdale IMCC. Bob enjoyed the outdoors, hunting, fishing, and camping. Lately, he was fond of attending auctions and his beloved dog, Molly. Information is available at www.kramerfuneral.com. Dolores Evelyn Blinn Nally, aged 80, of Solon, died Tuesday, August 11th in her home. Funeral Mass will be at 10:30 a.m. Monday, August 24th at St. Mary's Catholic Church in Solon. Burial will be in Cedar Memorial Cemetery in Cedar Rapids. A visitation will be from 1 to 3 p.m. Sunday, August 23rd at the church. The family will be providing an option to receive friends either inside the church for those who are comfortable or outside in front of the church. Brosh Chapel and the Avicenture in Solon is in charge of arrangements. And that concludes today's obituaries in the Gazette. Turning to the sports section of today's Gazette, the lead story is written by Jeff Johnson of the Gazette and titled, Marion Up Off Mat. It was not fun. An 0-9 season is never, ever fun. Quite bluntly, it sucks. Quote, was definitely tough last year having things go the way they did, Garrett Wagner said. Quote, I mean, you go out there with a lot of hope, high hopes for the season, said Caden Swanger. You see the numbers not going your way, and you end up going 0-9. It's a little tough, end quote. Wagner, Swanger, and the rest of the guys who went through that donut 2019 with the Marion football team already have had to deal with a bunch of other adversity as they attempt to reverse course on the field and the scoreboard. There's playing during the COVID-19 pandemic, obviously. There is last week's calamitous derecho storm that devastated their city, their school, some of their homes, and their field. Thomas Park is a mess. Quote, me, my sister, and her boyfriend went down there right after the storm hit to look at it, Swanger said. The roof of the press box is off. Our utility shed, the back wall, is gone, and so is the roof. One of the light poles fell down. There are sections of bleachers on the field. It's a sight to see, end quote. Marion wasn't able to practice at all last week, getting its first official workout in Monday night on a baseball diamond at Excelsior Middle School. That's part of the Lynn Mar School District, and Lynn Mar Stadium is where the Indians' three scheduled home games will be played on Saturday afternoons, not Friday nights. Marion's season opener next week at Washington has been canceled, meaning it'll be a 6-game regular season, health permitting. Quote, these guys have just rolled with the punches, fifth-year head coach Tim LaBelle said. I told them Monday that we weren't going to have our first game, and they were like, okay, then when's our first game? I told them it was Center Point Urbana, and oh, by the way, we're going to be playing at Lynn Mar. They were like, okay, anywhere, anybody, anytime. They're all in. They just want to play football, end quote. And they want to be successful. Quote, it's a new drive, basically, said Swanger, a senior lineman. We've never really had this problem before under Coach LaBelle. A lot of the seniors that played last year, you go a whole season without a win. You are that much more hungry for one this upcoming season, end quote. Quote, our first practice had just a completely different feel, said LaBelle. We had such a purpose and energy and confidence, a group of motivated young men, seniors in particular, and that's not to say the junior class also isn't very motivated, but this senior class has generally been pretty successful. They really don't want to go out like last year. They want to flip a switch, leave a legacy, end quote. Marion really struggled offensively last season, accumulating just over 1,000 total yards in 9 games. LaBelle switched to a triple option attack because he felt it his best fit, his personnel, but he is going back to a more spread attack this season. Either sophomore Alex Mata or junior Jackson Tejeda will lead that attack at quarterback. Quote, we have a lot of kids who were sophomores last year who came up and played some on varsity, said Wagner, a senior tight end defensive end. Quote, so they are kind of like coming into veteran roles right now. I just think everybody is excited, end quote. Quote, the coaches are all in, LaBelle said. We flipped our coaching model, so we have one coach per position. We have an offensive staff and a defensive staff. So our 9-10 team is practicing offense, and our varsity team is practicing defense. Then we flip halfway through the practice. And then we work on special teams. The coaches coach their positions and just flip fields. After the first day, I was blown away by the great job our coaches were doing and just how well the kids were working together, end quote. Marion's schedule, at a glance, includes matchups with Center Point Urbana, Davenport Assumption, Clinton, Dubuque Waller, North Scott, and DeWitt Central. Their record last year was 0-9 under Coach Tim LaBelle, who has coached there for 4 years with an overall record of 16-20. Returning to the news, Gage Biskeman of the Gazette reports 21,000 Alliant customers in Linn County without power on Wednesday morning. Over 21,000 customers are still without power in Linn County on Wednesday, 9 days after a derecho storm tore through eastern Iowa. In a Wednesday morning news release, Alliant confirmed it met a major milestone on Tuesday night in restoring power to 90% of its Iowa customers. Quote, our crews and teams from around the nation and Canada immediately set to work, and now about 230,000 homes and businesses once again have power available to them, the release said. Quote, while we met a major milestone last evening, our goal is and always has been power available to all, end quote. Across the state, 463,718, or around 94% of its overall Iowa customers, have power. 76,558, or around 78% of Alliant's Linn County customers, have power, which still leaves 21,045 without. Additionally, all remaining lines and circuits needed to provide service to ITC Midwest distribution customers have been restored, spokesperson Rod Pritchard said on Tuesday night. Quote, ITC Midwest still has a lot of work to do in the weeks ahead to rebuild lines to ensure system resiliency and reliability, Pritchard said. Quote, we are continuing to work with Alliant Energy, SIPCO, and the affected rural electric cooperatives and municipal utilities we serve to help them get power restored to customers, end quote. Linn County Rural Electric Cooperative said 99% of its customers has power in a Wednesday morning update. Quote, crews are working on the remaining 164 outages in Linn, Johnson, and Benton counties, the release said. Quote, these outages include repairing lines in the rural Toddville, Palo, and Centerpoint area, end quote. Linn County REC said other individual outages involve damage to customers' side of their meter. Customers who have had an electrician make necessary repairs need to call the Linn County REC office so they can be energized. Johnson County is almost back to full power as of Wednesday morning at 9 a.m. MidAmerican Energy had all of its Iowa City area customers energized with zero outages. In a Tuesday evening news release, MidAmerican said almost all of its customers in general have power, and crews are assisting Alliant crews in eastern Iowa on Wednesday. Quote, last week, more than 280,000 MidAmerican customers were without power and crews responded to over 1,500 gas emergencies in storm-affected areas, the release said. We're happy to report that we have restored power to nearly every customer affected by the storm, end quote. Diana Nolan reports in the community section that Mormon Helping Hands volunteers are returning to Cedar Rapids for weekend work. These are volunteer crews with chainsaws and rakes who will return to Cedar Rapids on Saturday and Sunday for working up brush, limbs, small trees that are on the ground, not bringing down trees or climbing on roofs. Assistance from Helping Hands is free. Some teams may be available to pick up extra work not already scheduled. Email sims.susanm@gmail.com. Priority is given to nonprofit agencies and people who are elderly, have disabilities, or financial needs. If you don't have email but fit into those categories and need help, call Diana Nolan at 319-368-8508. Sitting on my porch swing Saturday morning, catching some early light and fresh air as I searched for the city's latest tree debris updates, my anxiety level began to rise. Contrary to what I had read earlier, I discovered I would need to move all the limbs that fell from a city tree into the space between my sidewalk and curb. They were too heavy and too tangled for me to drag. Near tears, I looked up to see two young men in yellow t-shirts headed my way. I jumped up, raised my arms in a touchdown salute, and yelled thank you before they even opened their mouths. I just knew they were coming to help me, and I was right. Do you need help? Yes. Their shirts said Mormon Helping Hands. They assured me they would be back with a team bearing chainsaws and rakes to tackle the limbs blanketing my front lawn. My kind next-door neighbors had previously cut me a path from porch to curb, which also helped immensely. I asked about the cost, then fought back tears as I croaked out my gratitude when they said, no charge. They were working at another house first, but assured me they would be back shortly with their team. What a welcome sight about 30 minutes later when five men and one woman from Cedar Falls, Cedar Rapids, Iowa City, and Utah rounded the corner onto 7th Avenue Southeast with two chainsaws and rakes. In about 5 minutes, they were done with my yard and moving two doors down to cut a swath from steps to curb for a household that has several people recovering from surgeries. And that does it for today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Wednesday, August 19th, 2020. I'm your reader, Paula Carrezzi. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thank you for listening.
From the Bureau of Economic Geology, this is Earth Date.
What exactly is fossil water, and why have we consumed so much of it? No, it's not a new brand of bottled water imported from the days of dinosaurs. Fossil water came from melting ice sheets, ancient lake systems, and a generally wetter climate tens to hundreds of thousands of years ago. It percolated into porous rocks, which were then buried under deep layers of sediment, where it was sealed off from the surface, and there it stayed, until farmers discovered it. And in the second half of the 20th century, they started drilling wells into fossil aquifers and pumping like mad, turning sunny, dry places into acres and acres of green farmland. Crop supplies boomed. Food became cheaper and more plentiful, grown in formerly parched places like California and Kansas, and shipped around the world for people like you and me to eat, ingesting fossil water with it. The trouble is, fossil water is a finite resource, and new studies suggest that many fossil aquifers may become depleted this century, so that we won't be able to rely on them any longer. This could mean that the crops that depend on them could become less plentiful and more expensive again. All the while, population will likely increase, the climate will likely warm, our demand for water will continue to climb, which means we'll have to adapt to the lack of fossil water, just as we adapted to its discovery, this time with more efficient crops and farming methods and more efficient use. For Earth Date, I'm Scott Tinker.
Earth Date is produced by the Bureau of Economic Geology at the University of Texas at Austin, with support from Schlumberger, helping oil and gas companies increase production and efficiency while lowering environmental impact. You can hear more EarthDate stories at earthdate.org.